KPCC supporters include Fox Searchlight Pictures presenting The Shape of Water, winner of the Critics' Choice Award for Best Director and Picture, BAFTA Award for Best Director, the Golden Globe for Best Director, winner of the Producers Guild Award, winner of the Directors Guild Award, and now nominated for 13 Academy Awards, including actress Sally Hawkins, supporting actress Octavia Spencer, supporting actor Richard Jenkins, score by Alexandre Desplat, director Guillermo del Toro, and Best Picture of the Year, now playing.
Great to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by critics Peter Rayner of the Christian Science Monitor. Claudia Puig joins us, president of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association. We begin this week with a review of Annihilation, starring Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Gina Rodriguez. It's written and directed by Alex Garland. Peter, what'd you think of Annihilation?
Well, just in time for the legalization of pot in California comes this very head-trippy movie. Alex Garland is a terrific director. He Ex Machina, I think, was one of
That's a terrific film.
That was his first feature. This is his follow-up to that, that was just an amazing movie.
It was
so atmospheric and
great performances. Oscar Isaac,
and he's in this one too.
Yeah, he's in this one as well. Not in a majorly way. I wish I could say I like this movie altogether because parts of it are so wonderful, and it does have that creepy atmospheric quality that Ex Machina had. Natalie Portman is a biologist whose husband has gone off to some secret military operation and is presumed missing, and then he returns a year later, but there's something wrong with him. And so she ends up with a group of four other women to go into this sort of, strange, iridescent, marsh-like area called the Shimmer, which is mutating people in some ways that people don't understand, and all these other military convoys have been lost there. So she's going in with these other women, all scientists. And the ominousness, the sort of free-floating ominousness that you find in this movie, I think is really powerful. But there's also a lot of rather, schlocky special effects. A lot of the shimmer stuff seemed to be, like out of 60s psychedelia.
Which is funny because Ex Machina had, I thought, pretty strong effects for what wasn't a big budget movie.
No, not at all. And maybe the problem here is that, the bigger the budget, the less you have to, reinvent the wheel to make things seem more than they are. It's very humorless, too, which I'm not saying this should have been a laugh riot, but there's some really gross sequences in this film. There's attacks of, mutant bears and humanoid, lichens and all sorts of things that kind of pop out of the dark or the daylight. And what this shimmer does is essentially rearrange your DNA, and so people start mutating into other people, and the five women are all sort of going a little bit batty. It does create a mood that I think is stays with you, and I'll give it that. And Portman is very strong, in a very it's kind of like an expeditionary role, and it's also a love story in a way too, because one of the reasons she's going on this trip is to find what's going on there so she can save her husband who's dying from whatever it is that created this problem in the first place. So there is that. But then there's all these flash forwards and flashbacks that keep breaking the mood, which is something I find a lot in movies now, that, why can't you just sort of go with the story? Why do you have to keep shattering the mood with not only flashbacks and flash forwards, but confusing flashbacks and flash forwards?
Is this the Chris Nolan effect, that Nolan playing with time like he does quite effectively?
Not so effectively in Dunkirk, because
you were not alone.
Yeah, it worked for me. And usually the time thing is hard for me, but in Dunkirk, I was able to track it.
Yeah, but I do. I think that's definitely probably an influence. There's a lot of influences on this movie anyway. You can see, if you want to be a film nerd, there's Tarkovsky's Stalker, there's Alien, there's Arrival, there's 2001 for sure. The ending is very 2001-ish. So, you know, it's definitely worth seeing. Garland is a talent to be reckoned with. I just wish it wasn't quite as much of a mixed bag.
Annihilation, the film starring Natalie Portman, Alex Garland, the writer-director. It's rated R, and you can see it all over the place. It's in wide release. As is Game Night, an action comedy starring Jason Bateman, Rachel McAdams, and Kyle Chandler. It's co-directed by John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein. Mark Perez is the screenwriter. Claudia, what'd you think of Game Night?
I was mixed. Well, John Francis Daley, who is one of the two directors, as you mentioned, also co-wrote Horrible Bosses. So it shares a lot of DNA with Horrible Bosses, in addition to having Justin Bateman star in it. It tries really hard to be madcap, and it manages to be funny in parts. There's a lot of chemistry between Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams. It's really nice to see Rachel McAdams back in a comic role after Mean Girls. It's been a long time. And she's good. Her comic timing is good. And this is also less raunchy than Horrible Bosses, so I appreciated that. It's like, you know, it's trying to maybe be a more, maybe mainstream comedy, if you can call it that. The basic premise is that there are a couple who she wants to have children. It's a little bit unclear whether he does. He's conflicted. They have these pretty tame game nights where they play charades and board games. And then his brother, Kyle Chandler, who he has a lot of sibling rivalry with, tries to one-up him by doing this sort of interactive game night, and mayhem ensues. And it's, you know, there are times when I thought it worked, but it kind of went off the rails a few times. I did think that Jesse Plemons, as sort of the creepy next door neighbor, he always looks like a low rent Matt Damon, but there I've said it. but you know,
rent control Matt. Right. You know.
But he's good in this, and he's appropriately kind of creepy in an like ordinary creepy sort of way.
Yeah, I thought he was very good.
Yeah.
I don't think this movie, it has a terrific premise in the sense that you've got these two people, Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, who are very attracted to each other, you know, as a couple, because they're both really into games and they're into winning.
They're very competitive.
Very competitive, but in a sort of affectionate way. So that's an interesting premise.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about him not quite wanting to have kids, in the beginning of the movie, they can't conceive, so it turns out he has a low sperm count, which the doctor feels is because he's upset that his brother is going to be visiting him, who's very competitive with. You know, I mean, it's a
Should
bit of a stretch.
Should they use an MD consult on that one?
Yeah, I don't
kind
know.
Kind of a witch doctor.
Right, whoever was the MD consulted on this should, you know.
It's a short film.
Internet MD, right. But, I mean, that really took me by surprise. And, you know, so then when the brother shows up, there's this whole sibling thing going on. But all I could think of was, you know, sperm motility, which doesn't really function in the plot of this film, which is so confusing anyway, I felt. You know, this is the kind of movie, if you really try to parse out what's really going on in this movie, it makes no sense.
No, not really. But
they are charming together, Bateman and
they
McAdams.
Kind of hold it together. It's nice to see.
They have good timing.
Yeah.
I always like Jason Bateman. I have to say and isn't there some in-joke at some point where he talks about, you know, messed up child actors?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Which is a really,
There's a few sort of pop culture references like that. And then Sharon Horgan of Catastrophe, who I think is such an interesting and talented comedian. She's an Irish actress who's on this fantastic TV show, Catastrophe, on Amazon, I believe it is. She's in it. It's kind of not given quite enough to do, but she adds some life to it, too. And it's kind of fun. I saw it with a regular audience last night, and it was very
crowded.
You mean
real people, not critics?
The real people. Yes.
And they laugh more, don't they?
They do laugh more. Yes, they do. Hmm. We critics are a tough crowd.
Game Night is the action comedy. It's rated R in wide release. Every Day, romantic fantasy starring Ayn Gowrie Rice, Justice Smith, and Debbie Ryan. Michael Soucy is the director, and Jesse Andrews, the screenwriter. Claudia, what'd you think of Every Day?
Ooh, not much. well, let's see. Peter and I were in the same screening. And full disclosure, there were maybe about six of us in there. I think Christy was one of them, too.
These were unreal people.
Unreal people. Fantasy people, yes.
weren't laughing.
We were not laughing. We were laughing at our own little jokes about it. But this is a really ridiculously contrived adaptation of a very successful YA novel. Apparently that one is told from the perspective of, okay, well, let's start with the plot. Is this teenage person wakes up every day in a different body. So, okay, you got to go with that. And then...
person's named A.
A, yes.
I guess for adolescent.
Yes. Yeah, so or angst or something, yes.
Awful.
Yeah. But so the it's kind of an allegory about acceptance because some days, you know, A is a white heterosexual male. Other days he's a black male. Other days he's a mixed race woman. And just all kinds of different incarnations.
All humans.
Yeah.
And so it's supposed to be a message of inclusivity, which is a wonderful thing. But the plot is just so contrived and has these crazy holes. And it's never a good thing when you find yourself like trying to when you find the plot itself or the rules that it's set up being completely broken at every turn, and you're trying to parse it all out and think about it, and it's taking you out of the movie. And that's basically what we were, what I was found myself doing. And it's dull, it's confusing.
Yeah, I mean,
not
also,
so badly acted though.
Well, yeah, I mean, the everyday concept doesn't, you know, supposedly A takes over or inhabits the body of a teenager in the morning and then at the stroke of midnight departs.
11:50.
But that doesn't quite parse through the whole movie.
No.
There's also one of the bodies that's inhabited is a blind kid, and that's barely dealt with in the movie at all.
And one of them actually stays past the midnight point and then thinks he's possessed by the devil. And the poor kid is sent off to what looks like an exorcist priest or something. And we never hear from him again. I kept worrying about him the rest of the movie. What about the kid who thought he was possessed by the devil?
Yeah, there's probably a lot on the cutting room floor.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more days on the floor. Yeah, Maria Bello.
She's a wonderful actress. She plays the mother. There's sort of an intimation. The father is bipolar and he's always off painting something, painting heads. That was never explained why he's always painting faces. He claims he's painting faces he's never seen, which I don't think is really possible. How you could,
well,
you can't really,
and also
something.
I think it's supposed to be that aspect is sort of a tribute to the artistic sensibility of those who are outsiders.
But, yes,
but
it was kind of a MacGuffin though.
Paintings
I thought he was
were
gonna...
terrible.
Yeah,
I mean, they're really like, you know, sub hotel room art, and so it doesn't say much for them.
No, you know. And you think he's somehow going to be a part of this? Like maybe he's a guy who woke up in a different body, but no, like,
no, and, he's know. Just. Is, I guess it's look, I don't think either of us, certainly I am not a member of the target audience for this film, and it's probably going to do really well anyway, despite our bills.
But it seems like the book was a much better, it's something you could probably, you know, present in a book much better.
It could have been freakier, too, given the nature of the story with all of these, you know, adolescent morphs into, you know, the racial and sexual, it's awfully peachy keen.
Yes,
you know,
and she always ends up with sort of hetero white males.
Right,
or,
the predominantly hetero white guy for the last half hour of the movie.
Right. I kept thinking about Ghost, too. Remember where Whoopi Goldberg inhabited the Patrick Swayze thing? There was a little bit of that. I don't know. It's just, it's a
mess. Don't say that too loud. It'll be in a quote line.
Every day, romantic fantasy. It's rated PG-13 and wide release. You're mentioning Maria Bello, how good she is. The Cooler was on TV the other night. I was catching it with William H. Macy, and so good in that film.
She's always so good. And unfortunately, in this one, she is given so little to do. And she's supposedly cheating on the dad, which you can understand after you see his bad paintings. But
right, she wants to date.
That's cold. Just because of bad artist. That's it.
She wants to date Picasso.
Right.
You know, so.
Our next film, the biographical drama, The Young Karl Marx. You can guess what it's about. Raoul Peck is the director and co-screenwriter with Pascal Bonitzer. Peter, what'd you think?
Well, Raoul Peck's last movie was I'm You Know Not Your Negro, which was the really powerful documentary that's drew from the life and writings of James Baldwin. This movie is not a documentary, and it's funny because that movie was so incendiary, the documentary, and this film is so stiff and so sort of nakedly agitprop in many ways that, I said, why am I watching this really dull biopic by this director who did, you know, Lumumba and I'm Not Your Negro? I don't know. I guess he just felt that was the way to put this story forward.
I was shocked by that same thing because I loved I'm Not Your Negro. And this feels so rote. And for, you know, it's ironic because here is Karl Marx complaining about vagueness and this, you know, a vague ideology. And this movie feels really vague it feels like kind of a semi-masterpiece theater, but not to that level. It just is very stodgy and it doesn't seem to take any chances.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there have been any movies about the young Karl Marx.
No, there should be.
Or
yeah.
the old Karl Marx, for that matter. But you know, it's I think 1843 to 1850 is the span of this film, and
right.
and his you know when he meets up with Frederick Engels, you know, who he that part I was trying to think, where have I seen this?
Hold that thought. Okay. Young Karl Marx is the film. It's unrated. We'll tell you more about where he saw that before. We're back in 1 minute. You're listening to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. We're so glad to come your way every Friday live at 11 and Saturday at noon here on 89.3. And I hope to see you Sunday. We're at Theater at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Peter and Claudia and all our other Film Week critics are going to be there as we tell you about the Oscar-nominated films in the major categories. We'll show clips of all the Best Picture nominees, and we'll even take some audience questions. We hope you'll join us. Beautiful, historic Theater at Ace Hotel on South Broadway, downtown Los Angeles. Tickets are available at kpcc.org/in-person. I hope to see you on Sunday. We were talking about the young Karl Marx before we broke, a biographical film from filmmaker Raoul Peck. And Peter, you were saying it was reminiscent of...
Yeah, well, I kept thinking, you know, when Karl meets Fred... What does this remind me?
When Harry met Sally?
Well, no, what does this remind me of? And then, lo and behold, I'm looking in the press notes for this film, and it said, quote, the twosome resembles a working pair of friends not unlike, say, Lennon and McCartney. And that's what I was thinking.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the other
like
Lennon.
Kind of they meet. Yeah. Well, no, not that Lennon. Yeah.
The young Karl Marx, yeah. Unrated. You can see it at Lemley's Royal Theater, West L.A., and Lemley's Playhouse in Pasadena. The Boy Downstairs, a comedic drama that stars Zasha Mamet, Matthew Scheer, and Sarah Ramos. It's written and directed by Sophie Brooks. Peter.
This is kind of a sweet movie. It has a premise that I'm not aware of in any other movie. This Zosia Mamet is playing this character who's in college, and then she dumped her boyfriend and went to England for 3 years. Now she's back in New York, living in Brooklyn in this apartment, and lo and behold, her ex-boyfriend is living downstairs, hence the title of the movie. So how do you deal with a situation like that? And she seems to sort of want to warm up to him, and he has a girlfriend.
Yeah,
be friends, but maybe more than that. And so there's an interesting dynamic that goes on between the two of them. They're very, you know, affable, companionable actors. I don't think it quite amounts to a whole hill of beans.
No. It's forgettable, but pleasant. And I think to the extent that it works, it's because of her. She I think, comes across really likably and naturally. She's got a natural presence, and it's a good performance. It's kind of a millennial malaise, I guess, in some ways. You know, he's in The Alienist, Matthew Scheer, and of course she was in Girls. And they do have a nice chemistry, and it is an interesting prospect. You know, what do you do if that were to happen? I think it's a good concept. There's some good supporting performances too. I just, you know, it's I think it's a perfectly diverting and pleasant and fairly well written comedy. Just it you know, doesn't like amount to
it doesn't take
too
off
too much.
Yeah, but I do think it's sort of a testimony to chemistry in the sense
yes.
that if two ordinary actors had been in this movie, it would have been a very ordinary movie. So to the extent that they're both, you know, watchable and fun and talented, I think
yeah.
it does make a difference.
Yeah, it's kind of easygoing, and I think they're kind of endearing. So I would say go see this.
Yeah.
The Boy Downstairs, rated PG-13 at Lemley's Monica Film Center, Santa Monica. The Irish science fiction film The Cured stars Ellen Page, Sam Keeley, and Tom Vaughan Lawler. It's written and directed by David Frain. Peter.
I like this movie. I think it's, you know, I'm not the a zombie completist. I haven't seen every single zombie thing that's ever been out
which
there.
Which is tough to do now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, in real life, too. But I think that, you know, so I'm sure there are derivative aspects to this film. But
yeah, I thought Children of Men meets 28 Days Later meets World War Z, the hint of
right,
that.
Right, right, right. Ad infinitum. But it is Irish, and, you know, and so... I think there are certain parallels with, you know, the notion that in this future society, the zombies, they have found a cure for most of the zombies to you know, be healthy again, except for about 20% or so.
25%.
25% yeah. who are not, who are still, you know, quarantined. But the zombies who have reentered society, the ex-zombies, have a very difficult time being reintegrated into society because, understandably, most people think of them as monsters. And you know,
they're also haunted by their own
They've
done. Yeah.
Zombiness,
yes.
Yeah. And, which we see in garish close-up, yes. You know, in flashback quite often. But I think there's a certain touching aspect to the whole dilemma of reentering society and not being accepted, and that's certainly symbolic of so many different things. You know, soldiers returning with PTSD,
yes.
or AIDS, or the IRA in the case of this, possibly with you know, Ireland and so
Irish.
Forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked Ellen Page is in it. We should say she's also a producer. She's quite good in it. Not playing an Irish person, she plays an American person, although I think she's Canadian. But anyway.
It saves us from a bad Irish accent.
Exactly. but I thought that the lead actor did a good job. It got a little contrived in spots. And ultimately, the ending was quite.
It was a bit chaotic.
The
problem is, I guess, when you have a zombie movie, ultimately you have to deliver to the zombie fans.
Yes.
You know, and to sort of bring it out of the genre entirely into some other larger story.
Even though it's trying to be a little bit more substantive and contemplative. Yeah, I thought it worked. And I really liked 28 Days Later, which I believe was also, that was Danny Boyle.
But
right.
Yeah. I kind of felt like it was in that vein, post-apocalyptic thriller from the British Isles. And I tried to do something fresh and different. It wasn't always successful, but it was overall fairly good.
Yeah.
The Cured is the film. It's rated R. It's at the New Art Theater in West L.A. The comedy Half Magic is not only written and directed by Heather Graham, she stars in it with Angela Kinsey and Stephanie Beatriz. It is rated R. Claudia.
You know, in this Me Too Time's Up time that we're living in, I would hope that I expect to see all kinds of movies that will take the opportunity and kind of seize this moment and give us some good female empowerment films. So kudos to Heather Graham for doing this. I know this was probably conceived of before that. This is a well-intended comedy. I would expect something a little bit better from her. I guess she was one of the first people to speak up about Harvey Weinstein. This has its moments of sort of being a satire of, the sexism in Hollywood or just in general. I guess she has a boyfriend who's this obnoxious, just beyond obnoxious actor / producer who's a moron. But what ends up happening is you end up with kind of a silly formulaic comedy that ultimately they're supposed to be feeling empowered and realizing their inner potentials. And it ends up being about like, oh, will he call me kind of, you know, dating and boys. And I wish it had had more substance and they bring in this sort of magical, spiritual candle element.
Lighting candles.
Yeah. To bring good things to their way. And it's usually guys. So it feels kind of sitcom. It feels kind of lightweight and frivolous. But there are moments when it kind of works.
Mostly in the first half.
Yes.
She's this sort of, B-girl aspiring screenwriter who wants to be in the business. And there are some sharp observations of what someone has to put up with, with these jerks. But I don't know. My feeling was that she didn't. Maybe she was afraid of coming on too strong with that message.
I got that same sense because she's very
halfway through,
affable.
Yeah, it sort of turns into this frivolous frippery with holistic candles.
Right. and a rom-com.
And rom-com. Drunk dialing your ex and all sorts of things like that, which I think, is a disservice to probably what incentivized her to make this movie in the first place.
I think you're absolutely right because her character even seems that way. She wants to, she's a writer and she's got some strong ideas, but she's very kind of wide-eyed and charming about presenting them and kind of tentative. And I feel like she was kind of tentative in doing this. It could have been more satirical, could have been wiser.
I wonder if this film was probably made or at least developed before the whole movement began.
Yeah.
So
maybe she would have made a different movie now.
Could be.
It could be.
Well, maybe her next movie will be stronger.
I hope so. I'm glad to see her writing and directing.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Half Magic is the film. Heather Graham, the writer, director, and star of the film. It's rated R at the Vintage Los Feliz Theater. Survivor's Guide to Prison is a documentary that's directed by Matthew Cook. Claudia?
Well, there's an awful lot crammed in here, but the information is so important and so horrifying and appalling that it pretty much needs to be there. There is a lot of overlap with Ava DuVernay's 13th. Powerful documentary, 13th. And it's some statistics that we have heard before. Not to say that we shouldn't be hearing them again, because it is, you know, about the breakdown of our criminal justice system, about the, you know, prison system and the corruption. And in this case, we have a lot of factoids delivered by famous people like Danny Trejo, Deepak Chopra, Danny Glover, Quincy Jones. It's kind of an unusual collection of people. People that are known for other things. There's a portion that's narrated by Susan Sarandon. So it's star-studded, I guess. Maybe they think that, you know, people will pay closer attention. I know the director is someone who's kind of done more of that. He's more of an activist, I guess. And so
about drugs.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I think it kind of takes a fresh approach to our broken criminal justice system. It divides it up in chapters, how to survive this, how to survive being in prison. How, you know, it gives you some sort of obvious things like find yourself a good lawyer. Don't be polite to officers if you're pulled aside. But it's, you know, when it talks to advocates of the Innocence Project, and when it talks, it follows two wrongly incarcerated
Bruce Lister
two men.
And Reggie Cole.
Exactly. And that's when I think
who
it's
were freed
at strongest.
By the Innocence Project's
exactly.
work.
Right, yeah. Right. So you kind of see their whole arc, and I found that fascinating.
Yeah, that was fascinating because they spent, you know, decades in prison, and they do sort of anatomize what happened with them all along the way. I think it's a powerful movie, but it does the way it's structured, you know, with these sort of chapters, and I thought it was a little bit, you know, kind of in
forced.
Your face.
It has an in-your-face quality from the start.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, when Danny Trejo tells you to do something,
you do
you
it.
You do it. So, you know, he keeps interrupting. He's just, get a good attorney.
Yeah. Okay, Danny.
Shut your mouth. You know.
That's
okay.
Good advice in general.
Definitely.
Survivor's Guide to Prison, the documentary, directed by Matthew Cook. It's at the Arena Cine Lounge, Hollywood. And finally, we'll take a moment here to talk about the sci-fi drama Curvature, starring Lindsay Fonseca, Linda Hamilton. It's directed by Diego Halivas. Peter, what'd you think?
Not much, unfortunately. It's pretty much a mess from the get-go. A robotics engineer teams up with someone to figure out what happened with her husband who committed suicide, and it's all sorts of time travel aspects to this. I'm not the proper critic.
Oh, where's Andy?
Andy, where are you for time travel?
We need you.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, there's good time travel movies and there's bad time travel movies. I would say this is the latter.
All right, Curvature. Sounds like don't spend the time on it. It's unrated.
Don't travel there.
Yeah, Lemley's Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills. Just want to mention once more, this Sunday, our 16th annual. Yes, 16 years we've been doing our Film Week Academy Awards preview. Our critics are all going to be on stage at the Theater at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles. Great chance to hear what our critics have to say about the top categories for the Oscars. We'll also show clips from all the Best Picture nominees. We hope you join us for that Sunday. You can get your tickets at kpcc.org/in-person. Seats are still available, and we sure hope to see you there this coming Sunday at 1 o'clock, Theater at Ace Hotel. Coming up, we talk about a legal setback for SAG-AFTRA in its efforts to purge from IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, the ages of actors if actors don't want those ages to be posted. California actually passed a law which said actors had the right to have their ages removed from their IMDb listings, but earlier this week, a judge said no to that. That's a First Amendment infringement that IMDb has the right to post those ages. We'll talk about what comes next for SAG-AFTRA from its perspective, but now time for this update.
Hey, Film Week listeners. My name's Annie Gilbertson, and I'm the investigative reporter here at KPCC. I'm also the host of our new podcast, Repeat. The story starts with a string of officer shootings in South L.A.
I had no freeze, no nothing. I just heard shots.
The men shot were all criminals. The shooters, all sheriff's deputies. Law enforcement said each of the shootings was justified. But did it happen the way officers said it did? Subscribe to Repeat from KPCC, an Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen.
KVCC supporters include Fox Searchlight Pictures, presenting Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, winner of 5 BAFTA Awards, including Best Film, Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble, Golden Globe for Best Picture, and now nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including actress Frances McDormand, supporting actors Sam Rockwell and Woody Harrelson, original screenplay by Martin McDonagh, score by Carter Burwell, and Best Picture of the Year, now playing.
Great to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Just a reminder, in case you can't listen to the program when it airs on KPCC Friday at 11 or Saturday at noon, you can listen to it whenever you want. Wake up in the middle of the night, you want to listen to it, it's there as a podcast. You can get it on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and please feel free to review it. Also, you can get it at kpcc.org, so multiple ways you can customize your Film Week experience however you'd like to listen to the show. If you'd like to listen to the joint news conference going on right now with President Trump and the Australian Prime Minister, that is streaming at kpcc.org. That is an option for you if you want to hear it right now. We continue Film Week by talking about a recent court decision which supports the Internet Movie Database's right to continue to publish the ages of actors on their website. Now, last year, a California law was scheduled to go into effect which mandated that IMDb must remove the ages of actors when actors requested that IMDb do so. But the court decision was that that's an infringement on the First Amendment right of IMDb and that there is no legal justification for requiring the website to remove those names. With us is Duncan Crabtree Ireland, General Counsel and Chief Operating Officer for SAG-AFTRA. I just want to disclose that I am a member of SAG-AFTRA. Duncan, good to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be here.
So what's your response to the judge saying that this is really a First Amendment issue, that actors can't compel IMDb to hide that information?
Well, we really strongly disagree with the court's decision here, of course. We put forward, I think, strong arguments, first of all, that this is really about commercial speech. The court treated it like it was speech that receives a higher level of protection than commercial speech. But there's a whole series of cases. For example, if you think about restrictions on advertising with discriminatory content in it for housing or for jobs, we feel it's really a very similar situation and that the standard that the court applied was wrong. But moreover, the court made some assumptions about whether the law would be effective and how bad the problem really is that weren't based on evidence. We wanted to submit evidence. We did actually submit a declaration from a major talent agent. But the court didn't give us the opportunity to do discovery or to present evidence. And so we think that the decision really doesn't take into account the massive, massive problem of age discrimination that the state of California is trying to solve.
How is that relevant, though? I mean, just to put it bluntly, because I think we can all agree there's ageism in Hollywood, and actors and particularly actresses deal with this regularly. Bad problem. That's and I think the judge nodded to this, if not more than nodded. But you don't necessarily infringe free speech to deal with the problem, right?
Well, it's a balancing test, and even this court recognized that. The problem is the court didn't balance things correctly, in our view. You know, there are limitations on free speech. It's not absolute. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. As I mentioned before, you can't advertise for discriminatory housing practices or employment practices. This is part of a pattern of discriminatory employment practices that's going on in Hollywood. And, you know, just as any other employee, no one would think that it would be okay for their potential employer or for a database that serves their potential employer to publish their age so that that can be used to discriminate against them in employment. That's exactly what's happening here. We just don't think the court recognized it because we didn't get our chance to present the evidence that we think would have convinced the court, and we plan to make that argument to the Ninth Circuit.
Duncan Crabtree Ireland, SAG-AFTRA General Counsel and Chief Operating Officer, also with us. Attorney Royal Oaks, partner in the L.A. firm of Hinshaw and Culbertson, General Counsel for the Radio TV News Association of Southern California. Royal, good to have you with us again.
Hey, my pleasure. Always nice to talk to you, Larry.
Thanks. I'm also a member of RTNS, a member of both these organizations. So, Royal, share with us from the judge's perspective how he weighed this.
You know, the judge seemed to be concerned about the age discrimination problem, but I think his attitude was, you know, there are remedies. It's illegal to discriminate based on age in many situations. And in addition to that, he pointed out that the information that's on the IMDb website is truthful information. I guess you could argue there's a privacy issue. I mean, if they started publishing somebody's cholesterol count and violate HIPAA rules and so on, that'd be one thing. But I think that the problem that SAG-AFTRA ran into is that, you know, the age, it doesn't deserve the same kind of privacy. As in many cases, it's very public. And so the judge's comment was, this is truthful information that's being published. Do we really want to restrict the First Amendment? And, of course, part of it is kind of inside baseball here because, I mean, this started out because, you know, actors didn't really like age being in the Internet Media Database website. So they urged the government, state legislature, hey, how about passing a law that says actors may keep age out of those Internet pages? So they passed it. And then the IMDb folks sued the state of California to enjoin the state from enforcing the law. And this is governmental restriction on speech. And as we know, the First Amendment only protects speech from restrictions by the government. And so now Judge Chhabria, the federal court judge up in San Francisco, has granted the injunction saying the state cannot stop IMDb from publishing this truthful information about age. But as the lawyer for SAG-AFTRA indicated, some interesting arguments are on the table. And so as this goes up to the Ninth Circuit, you never know, it might get reversed.
Hmm. I wonder also, because, you know, Duncan, you make the point about how the harm is so grave, the economic harm to people who act because of ageism. But overwhelmingly, the people that use IMDb aren't casting agents. They're not directors. Most of it's just regular folks. And I have to say, I use IMDb a lot for age. I'm interested. How old is that person now? Or, you know, I'll be watching a movie and I'm curious. I would guess that 99% plus of usage is public curiosity about the age of an actor, not someone looking at someone's age as to whether they should employ them in a film role. So how do you weigh the public interest?
Sure. I mean, that's a great point, Larry. I mean, this law was primarily directed at IMDb Pro, which is, of course, an industry professional subscription site where you actually pay in order to gain access to the information. But it also does affect IMDb.com because we also know that that is widely used in the industry for casting as well. You know, when we started out this effort, we started out by approaching IMDb and trying to work collaboratively with them to reach a solution. And we had a number of suggestions because the truth is most members of the public aren't interested in the dates of birth of most working actors. They're really mostly interested in the dates of birth or the ages of high-profile celebrities, and that's not what this law at all is targeting. This law is really about the kind of people who are out there auditioning every day trying to get access to work and are finding their audition opportunities cut down by 90% due to the fact that they're no longer being viewed as having a portrayable age range, that they are just being called in only for projects that match their specific age. So we tried to work that out with IMDb. Unfortunately, there was not an interest on the other side in trying to reach a compromise there. So we went to the legislature with an idea that was specifically targeted. It's not accurate to say that this law bans IMDb from publishing dates of birth. What it actually says is that if a performer asks them to take down their date of birth, that they have to cooperate with that request. So it's a bit more nuanced than it generally gets portrayed.
I also wonder how much of these casting decisions are based on, you know, the numerical age, how much is based on how an actor looks, the age that they look, because so many actors do look younger than their years. I mean, because they put up a lot of attention to that and are often in, you know, good shape. And so age isn't necessarily relevant to the look of the person relative to the general population. I'd like to hear from our Film Week listeners who are actors and your thoughts about this. Do you think that having an age on IMDb Pro or regular IMDb, that has a negative effect on actors as they get older, Or do you think the bigger issue is what an actor actually looks like, and that casting agents, directors, take that more into account than the given age? Or do you think the number really is a very powerful force when it comes to casting? This is for our Friday live listeners to Film Week. If you're listening live Friday in the 11 o'clock hour and you're an actor, I'd like to hear your thoughts about IMDb, have publishing ages of actors. How important is that? 866-893-KPCC. We'll continue with Film Week in 1 minute. It's Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Once again, hope to see you on Sunday, 1 in the afternoon, Theater at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles, our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. We'll take a look at clips from all the Oscar-nominated Best Pictures, talk with our critics about their favorites in the various major categories. I sure hope you'll come join us. It's a fun time. Our critics have a blast, and audiences, so many people come back year in, year out. You can get your tickets at kpcc.org/in-person. We're talking right now about the legal setback suffered by SAG-AFTRA representing its actors who want the ability to have their names removed from IMDb Pro, which is used for casting of motion picture and television projects. Actors feel that having their names, ages listed there, that really aids and abets age discrimination. But the California law that was scheduled to go into effect last year, which would have required the Internet Movie Database to remove those ages upon request, that law has been suspended because of a judge's decision that infringed on IMDb's First Amendment rights to publish that information. If you're an actor, I'm very interested in hearing what you think about this. Again, ageism, we know, is a serious issue. The question is, does putting the age on the IMDb page, does that really play a role or not? Why or why not? Peter in Cypress Park, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, that digit on your IMDb page, especially the pro, really, really matters. Ageism is real. It's prevalent not only in this industry, but in many, many other industries. And for anyone to allow a company to put their name there, I think it's committing in many ways a kind of professional suicide. You just don't want to do it. It's not necessary. As you mentioned earlier, the look is what's important. If you're healthy, if you're fit, if you're able to do the job, that's all that should be necessary. An actor should have a right to allow that information to be there or not be there. It should not be up to some arbitrary company wanting to have that information simply for what reason? What are they going to use it for? I think it's not necessary.
Okay. And do you think that the casting community, that given age right there is a filter against casting certain people?
Well, absolutely. Because when you're applying for a job or you're being called in for something, there is an age group that is just on your resume. For instance, if you're playing 18 to 28, if they see that you're 35, they're not going to call you in.
Okay, regardless of whether you could pass for 28 or not. All right, Peter, I appreciate it very much. Peter, a working actor for 30 years. Amir in West Hollywood. Amir, your thoughts about IMDb and age publication.
So 9 years ago, there was a new show coming out called Community, and it was about community college kids. I was 30, and my age was on IMDb, and I was told that I was too old to audition for the role of Abed. Instead, the role came down to Danny Pudi, who got it, who's fantastic, who looks about the same age as I, but his name isn't on, or his age isn't on IMDb, and it came down to one other person who did get it, who's actually older than I am, but also his age is on IMDb. So their ages didn't stop them from getting an audition. It was my age that was actually printed on IMDb that stopped me from even being considered, even though all three of us are about the same age, look about the same age. We actually all three look young for our age. Brown don't crack. But essentially, I lost the opportunity at a six or seven figure income because my age was on IMDb.
All right. Amir, I appreciate hopefully you've gone on to other major projects.
I have. I'm doing okay. I'm actually on a TV show on Fox right now called L.A. to Vegas that I'm
all
very
right.
proud of.
Very good. Amir, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Amir joining us in West Hollywood. Let's talk next with Bob in Beverly Hills. Bob, your thoughts about this?
Hi, yeah. Actually, I'm an amateur genealogist, and I often work on family trees of celebrities, actors, and actresses. I do use IMDb to find out about their date of birth, but there are many other websites such as Wikipedia, California Birth Index. There are many, many other websites where people can just find out the date of birth of almost anyone. So just going after IMDb doesn't make sense to me, and it's the kind of information that we do need when we're doing family trees.
All right. So, Bob, you think that even if IMDb Pro doesn't publish the age, that the age is still going to be considered because casting directors will find it other places?
Right. There are many, many other websites where they can go to and okay. just find the information. Sometimes they're free. Sometimes they will have to pay for it. But there are many websites where the information is available.
Bob, I appreciate it very much. I mean, just as an aside, I'm on one of these public figure registry, websites. And it's funny because they have my age is 2 years older than I am, I think because of when I graduated college. I was young. So I actually, asked them to change it and, said I'm, whatever that was. So it would now have me as 61 instead of 59. And they never fixed it. They were totally unresponsive to it. But in my business, it doesn't matter. If you're an actor, the age is a big deal. Again, we're at 866-893-KPCC. Or you can post on the Air Talk Film Week page at kpecc.org. This is for those who are listening live Friday during our 11 o'clock hour. Let me go back to Duncan Crabtree, Ireland, General Counsel, Chief Operating Officer for SAG-AFTRA. What do you think are the prospects the Ninth Circuit takes this up?
I think there's a good likelihood that this case will get heard by the Ninth Circuit. We are obviously still in conversations with the Attorney General's office. We're both defendants in the case, so we are trying to work together with respect to how it moves forward. But Larry, if I could say just as to the point made by your last caller, I think the court makes the same mistaken impression, which is that if this information is available from some other source, that means this law won't work. And the fact of the matter is, our actor members know this law will work even though it doesn't apply to every source of information because the casting community isn't on a mission out there to find dates of birth. They're not going out and subscribing to new sites or doing deep dives on the internet. The fact of the matter is they're using IMDb, and IMDb pushes this information in their face by the very design of its site, which is among the things we've talked to them about. And so we are very, very sure that if this law, even though it doesn't restrict, and it was never intended to restrict all sources of dates of birth on the internet, that this law would actually make a huge difference for actors.
David in Sherman Oaks says this affects writers as well. Ageism for TV writers is really bad because it's believed only younger writers can write for a younger audience. Once you hit 40, it's hard to get work if you're not at the peak of your game. That's David in Sherman Oaks. It's, in fact, a separate issue that we've talked about on Film Week about the prevalence of ageism against writers in the creative community. Once again, you can keep the issue going on the Film Week Air Talk page, kpecc.org. My thanks to Duncan Crabtree, Ireland. Duncan, good to see you again.
Thank you, Larry. Good to see you.
Our thanks to Royal Oaks. Royal, great to talk with you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Royal Oaks partner at the L.A. firm of Hinshaw & Culbertson, and he's general counsel for the Radio and TV News Association of Southern California. Sure hope to see you on Sunday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, theater at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles, our 16th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. Still a chance for you to get your tickets at kpecc.org/in-person. Have a terrific weekend.